Chapter 4. Bear Fat. Wednesday, 1400 hours. The posted sentry, a volunteer from the Chimney Rock Interpretive Association, sat in a folding chair with an attached umbrella, reading a book. I pulled up to the iron pole gate that stretched across the entrance near the highway. By the organizer's request, the site was normally closed to non-Indians during the sacred ceremonies, but now, due to the fire, it was off-limits to anyone trying to enter except members of the team. Once I was through the gate, the volunteer closed it again behind me and returned to his reading. I drove across a stretch of flat scrub. Then trees began to form at the sides of the dirt track, and the elevation started to rise. I passed through the parking lot beside the tiny log cabin that served as the visitor center, where a group of Native American men and women sat at a picnic table under some trees. From there, I drove up a curving dirt and gravel road that climbed sharply as it wound up the side of the slope to the parking lot near the top. The two natural stone towers of Chimney Rock topped a cuesta, a slender rising ridge with a nearly vertical shaly escarpment on one side and a steep forested slope on the other, where the fire now burned. This stunning formation was centered in a bowl-like valley rimmed by mountain ranges, all higher than Chimney Rock with only three breaks, one to the south toward where Funnel Mesa in northern New Mexico, one to the north through Yellow Jacket Pass, and one to the east toward the Continental Divide. Motorcycles, cars, vans, and several motorhomes jammed the paved parking lot near the top. As I steered my way through, I noticed a group of about 40 dark-haired people under some trees near the western rim, many of them sitting on benches and reinforced stacked blocked walls that had been created in the style of Chicoan architecture. I passed the small building housing restrooms and a water tap and parked on the side of the road leading out, where low-hanging piñon branches scratched the top of the Jeep. As soon as I was out of the car, a handsome, brown-skinned man wearing braids and a t-shirt bearing the slogan, "Free the Redskin," came toward me. Behind him trailed a young woman in jean shorts and a tank top. I could tell.